It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm David Asman.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Jimmy Failla, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, December 18th, 2023. I'm Evan Brown. The U.S. Navy is sending more assets to the Red Sea to counter attacks instigated by Yemen's band of rebels known as the Houthi. And while the White House says it has nothing to do with Israel's war against Hamas terrorists, there's every reason to believe the Houthi are following Iran's orders.
Now we know they're targeting American ships. That is something that only a group that understands its risk calculations very well would do.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Israel's war against Hamas in the Gaza Strip is entering its third month as more than 100 hostages are still in captivity, kidnapped on October the 7th from Israeli farming communes called kibbutzim. And while that is ongoing, Iranian-aligned fighters, mostly based in Iraq, fire on U.S. troop positions in that country and in Syria. And in the Red Sea, drones and missiles from Yemen are targeting cargo vessels and the U.S. Navy. The U.S. retaliates by shooting down the rockets or the remote-controlled unmanned vehicles. But now a task force is deploying. But it's not the recognized government of Yemen that is doing this. It is a rebellion faction known as the Houthis, who now control part of that country and are known for terrorism, normally against the Saudis next door, but they are part and parcel of Iran's terror machine.
They are a group inside of Yemen that has been receiving support from Iran over at least the past 10 years, if not longer.
Catherine Zimmerman is a fellow with the American Enterprise Institute specializing on the Middle East.
They actually started as an opposition group with legitimate political and economic grievances against the then Yemeni government. Their big claim to fame was in 2014, seizing power and really jumpstarting the Yemeni civil war. So they are the group that has been fighting the Yemeni government and coalition and Saudi Arabia. So for those who've been familiar with the news, the Saudi air campaign was targeting the Houthis in 2015 and afterward. The Houthis have really maintained the control over most of northwestern Yemen since they seized it in 2015.
And how have they been able to maintain that control? I think they're always referred to as Houthi rebels, and I think that might give the image of being rather ragtag and haphazard, but that's not really the case at all with them. They can be at times very well organized and certainly funded and coordinated through the granddaddy, the godfather, if you will, of jihadism in the Middle East, and that is Iran, and often functioning as one of Iran's proxies, sort of doing their bidding. So how have they been able to maintain that kind of control and that presence where they've become a force to deal with regard to the with regard to shipping, international shipping?
The Houthis have benefited, as you noted, from their relationship with Iran. So when they first started, they certainly were a ragtag group of rebels. They were in the mountains in northern Yemen, had very little training, very little arms, and were basically relying on the ability to win as insurgents rather than, because it's easier to win as an insurgent, you just don't lose.
Right.
But you know, in 2014, when everything changed, the Houthis began to reform, and they're not a ragtag group. They're sitting on top of the government. They run it precisely. They've had training from Lebanese Hezbollah through Iran. And then the IRGC Quds Force has been on the ground inside of Yemen, providing them both military training, but also the strategic, political, diplomatic advice that has allowed them to function almost as a state. And that's really their aim, is they claim to be the Yemeni government. They want to be recognized as the state, and they've begun to act like one.
since the war in Israel and with Hamas has broken out, the Houthis have kind of stepped up their game a bit, probably at the insistence or urging and funding, of course, by the Iranians, where they are attacking commercial shipping and they have been attacking military craft as well. And the U.S., their response, perhaps the U.S. response has not been the most forceful, but now the U.S. is, I think, is kind of being forced to at least deal with the problem a bit more, that these are coordinated attacks against U.S. naval vessels and other U.S. interests, international interests, and there needs to be a response. So there looks like there is the formulation of a response. But what has the U.S. government been doing these past, let's say, 2 months?
With regard to the Houthis, the U.S. government has worked closely with its partners in Saudi Arabia, in Oman, and the UAE, as well as, of course, with Israel, to try to find a way to contain and separate the war in Gaza from this escalation in the Red Sea.
Right.
And what they've done is really to message to the Houthis and try to tell them to stop it. It's been a threat of stop it or else. But there's been no real effort from the United States to lay out what the possible implications for Houthi attacks would look like. To date, we've just been absorbing the attacks, deploying additional forces into the Middle East, including we've got a couple of destroyers now in the Red Sea to defend the commercial shipping. It's much more of a defensive game than an offensive game.
Sending a couple of naval destroyers, is that really enough? I mean, we have a pretty large Navy. There's always talk that China's Navy will eclipse ours, but I believe ours is still pretty large and pretty powerful. Would we need more? I mean, I would imagine the Houthis don't have as much firepower as we do. So should we be pursuing more firepower, I guess, is the big question.
The bigger challenge here is that the United States has wanted to move its military assets away from the Middle East.
Right.
If you've been paying attention at all, right, it's been to get the military to focus on the Asia Pacific theater. And with the outbreak of war, we all of a sudden have two aircraft carrier groups back in the Middle East defending our own troops. They do have enough firepower to defend. So the U.S. Navy posted a tweet right after the Navy Army game saying 22-0 USS Kearney versus the Houthis, right? Talking about all of the drones that the Kearney has shot down. You can add another 14 to that number from this Saturday.
Right.
The challenge is it's just responsive, right? It's shooting things down from the sky. We don't actually have a good assessment of what the Houthis have stashed away in the country. We've been interdicting shipments for the past 8+ years that are showing that Iran has really moved weapons and munitions and drones into Yemen. And what's also evident from the shipment is that it's just the tip of the iceberg that we're seeing, which means that there are significant caches inside of the country.
We are speaking with Catherine Zimmerman. She's a fellow with the American Enterprise Institute on the U.S. increasing its military posture in the Red Sea in response to attacks by Houthi rebels of Yemen against shipping interests as well as the U.S. Navy. On the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition, we'll have more straight ahead. Then being able to amass this kind of cash almost feels like we weren't paying attention. I mean, there's a constant struggle about our role in the world. Are we the world's police force? Are we not? Do we need to be defending foreign nations as much as we do? The idea of ending foreign wars is quite popular these days, but we have allowed a hostile group or nation to amass a weapons cache that's quite formidable. It's interrupting or threatening commerce in a very precarious part of the planet. Did we misstep here? From your perspective anyway, that's hard. I realize it's a hard question to answer, but could we have done more to prevent this position that we're in now?
Yeah, as you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Right.
But yes. The kind of options for the United States when all of this kicked off, even before the outbreak of the Yemen civil war, were much greater, right? We bought into a process in the Arab Spring that set us up for the civil war conflict. And you can kind of trace this all the way back. But if you were just to look at the arms shipments that were going from Iran to Yemen for the Houthis, there were additional options for the United States. We were focusing on interdicting the smuggling. And of course, it's difficult. Anyone who has been in that part of the region knows that the body of water is covered with small fishing dhows, so small boats that the Iranians then loaded some of them with weapons, which meant that even with the military assets the U.S. and our partners had in the region, finding the right boat, stopping it on open water, I mean, it's nearly impossible. I think more importantly, though, the United States really only understood what was happening with the Houthis with regard to the Yemen conflict and the Iran-Saudi conflict. What we had missed was the introduction of these longer range weapons, the battlefield testing of Iranian drones and ballistic missiles, and noting that the drones then showed up in Ukraine with the Russian military.
Right.
And, you know, really de-emphasized the strategic changes in the security dynamics in the Middle East that Iran was pushing here.
It seems that Iran might have been more prepared than we thought to carry out a longer fight here, that Iran is certainly somehow in support of or to some way has supported or is behind Hamas's actions that led to this. But certainly they've capitalized on it. There have been attacks on U.S. troops, as you've mentioned. There's attacks on U.S. Commercial interests in the Red Sea, which are in the interests of our allies in the Middle East, whether it's Israel, whether it's Saudi Arabia, whether it's the UAE. So everyone kind of now has been sort of drawn in. It almost feels like a small-time regional conflict with the fear that it's going to get larger. Does it get larger, or how do we stave that off? Because, again, we have a couple of destroyers. They can take out some drones here and there, but that doesn't seem to be a definitive military goal to keep knocking drones out of the sky.
That's the million-dollar question, yeah. And it's the one interest that the United States shares with both Israel, Iran, and other actors, which is to contain this conflict and prevent it from actually escalating into this regional war, right, because of what it would do for global security. What we do about it is still not clear. It's very clear that what decisions the United States have made to date have not prevented the escalation, have actually emboldened the Houthis to continue to push forward, where a couple of weeks ago it was questionable whether the drones being fired near the U.S. destroyers were actually being fired at the ship or at a nearby commercial tanker. Now we know they're targeting American ships. That is something that only a group that understands its risk calculations very well would do. So how do we get out of this mess? One, we need to ensure that the Iranian-backed axis of resistance, this is the collection of groups that you've mentioned,
right,
Lebanese Hezbollah, the Houthis, Hamas, the groups in Iraq that have been shooting at American bases in Syria and Iraq. All of those groups need to understand that the United States and its partners are going to be the security guarantor, that we're not looking for a shift in the balance of power in the region, and that this type of activity is simply not acceptable. The narrative that they've spun, that this is the United States escalating the conflict when it's just been reactionary from the American military and frankly from the Israeli military as well, is interesting, because it's really turned the tide of public opinion away from the U.S. enforcing typical and traditional points for the United States, such as freedom of navigation on the seas, free commerce, right? We're looking at ships that are rerouting around the Cape of Africa, which is 40% longer than going through the Suez Canal.
And that's, I mean, that is noteworthy. I mean, to take on the extra expense and time to go around the edge of Africa to avoid this one part of the planet, which would make things easier. I mean, that goes to show how dangerous of a situation we're in, I think.
It certainly does. And if you remember the evergreen crisis during the COVID pandemic, where we had the ship blocking the Suez and what happened to commercial trade, this is that, but on fire. These are intentional decisions by the commercial ships to send their cargo much longer routes to avoid the escalation. It's going to drive up costs and cause delays in delivery.
Catherine Zimmerman, fellow with the American Enterprise Institute, thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.